Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week, we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, Friday, September 18th, 2009, we are in both the Midwest and in California with our wonderful guest, Comscore Executive Chairman and Co-Founder, Gian Fulgoni. Welcome, Gian.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you? Thanks for having me on today.
I'm thrilled to have you on. You're, definitely an esteemed businessman, has won many, many awards. If people don't know your background, I encourage them to go to jenniferlindsay.com or to your own website to find out more. And we're definitely going to talk, quite a bit about Comscore. But before we get there, I just wanted to ask you really quick if you had any thoughts on Adobe's acquisition of Omniture this week, announced this week.
It was, caught a lot of people by surprise, and I think that let me just shut this machine down here. It certainly said that that there is a market in the acquisition space with some very attractive premiums, which I think the market seemed to react very positively to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's healthy, I think, for everybody. As I said, I think it caught a lot of people by surprise, and they were trying to figure out really the implications of it. But certainly it brings two very, very powerful companies together that I think will be able to do some pretty exciting things for website operators.
I think you're right, and we already have a couple of callers in the queue. But before we get to the folks on the line, if they can stay with us, I want to ask you how Comscore came about, because, of course, you're a co-founder. You have this amazing track record of building companies to, the billion-dollar mark and beyond. Where did that start in your both in your career and, just in terms of your co-founder as well? How did it come about?
Yeah. Well, Majid Abraham, who is our CEO, and I had worked together for a decade or so at a company called Information Resources, IRI, who is one of the leading suppliers of point-of-sale scanner information to the CPG
mm-hmm.
industry. So I think we knew a lot about the value of databases, the value of information, and so forth. And when we looked at the internet, we realized this was '99, so the internet was in full bloom, if you will.
Yeah.
But it seemed to us that there was this obsession with eyeballs. And so there were two companies out there counting eyeballs for the industry. One was Net Ratings, and the other was Mediametrics, which we subsequently acquired. But they were both, just measuring how many people visited a website and what their demographics were. And neither company was measuring e-commerce or what people were buying.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing a back-of-the-envelope calculation to figure out in the offline traditional world how much money do companies spend trying to understand how consumers buy products versus how much money do they spend on ratings, whether that be television, print, radio, and the like.
Mm.
And lo and behold, the answer was they spent five times as much trying to understand how the consumers buy products. So we looked at the internet and said, well, nobody's measuring e-commerce. Why don't we set about building that capability? Yes, we'll have the audience measurement as well. We'll have the eyeball counts as well. But we'll add the ability to measure what people are buying, and we'll do that in a kind of a 360-degree manner, and we'll be able to figure out cause and effect and the impact that advertising has on buying behavior. So that was the idea. I think we realized that while e-commerce at that point was in its infancy, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that it should grow to be a significant business, which it has. So we thought, well, if we can figure out the technology, and we did not have it at the time, we had not really figured out how we were going to do what we wanted to do, but I think we were pretty confident that of two things. One, if we could get it done, it would represent a pretty attractive business. And number two, that we could figure out the technology challenges. I guess I was looking at Majid to figure out the technology challenges.
But, well,
but,
you're, Speaking of technology, you're co-holder, we should say, of a patent, which is one of the unique selling points of the data collection that ComScore offers, I think.
Yep.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, this is we've got a number of patents at ComScore, and a number in the queue as well, and I think the one you're referring to is the one that covers the software that our panel participants download to their computer that then sends us back the information on what sites they've gone to and how long they've stayed there and, you know, what they bought and so forth. And that's a pretty important patent, as you can imagine, because that gets to the guts of what we do, which is, with permission from consumers, we monitor everything that they do on the web. So we get a full picture of online behavior in all of its many facets.
Yeah, so I think the panel that you're talking about, for folks that don't know, is the MediaMetrics 360 panel-centric digital audience measurement product. Is that what you're referring to?
That's a mouthful, right?
It doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but yeah.
So we track across the world 2 million people, 1 million in the United States, and 1 million that are scattered across about 170 countries. So it really is a worldwide database, and from that database we glean a lot of really important information. Now, the 360 product that you mentioned is a new, let's say, a new version of MediaMetrics, and actually the first data we released this week. And what we've done there is to integrate server-side statistics with the panel data to get as complete and as granular a view as we can of what's going on at individual websites across the internet.
So this is a good point to bring up this question. Guy Kawasaki was the first to pose this question on this program. He says he has all types of analytic sources for Alltop, yet if he's trying to get an answer to what he considers a pretty straightforward inquiry, he says he sees conflicting data from all the different sources he's using and goes as far as to check server records, which you just mentioned, to try to get an answer to what he feels he can, quote, trust.
Yeah.
And so I guess what advice would you give to executive-level folks like him who are trying, you know, that are pretty technical and are trying to really get their hands around analytics in general and how to trust different sources?
Yeah. That's a really good question. And I think that in the age of computer measurement of behavior, you can get so many different perspectives on that behavior that you really have to be careful that you know what it is that you're looking at. I'm not sure there's a really simple answer I can give you here to this question, important though it may be, but it's almost as if, you know, every particular database, you've got to be really careful that you understand what it is and is not measuring. So let me give you an example. So if you're looking from the website perspective, you know, you theoretically should be seeing everything that's coming into that website. Okay, but some of that traffic might not be valid traffic. It might be bot traffic that's coming in. You might have traffic from overseas that shouldn't be counted in the particular, you know, geographical space that that you're measuring. You certainly aren't necessarily looking at people, because you could have a situation where you've got the same user, the same person is coming in the morning from a work computer and in the evening from his home computer or her home computer. And so, you know, that's one person, two machines, and could be two cookies. So there are all kinds of complexities. Now, on the panel side, you've got some issues. Yes, you're measuring people. You have their demographics. You know, it is a sample, and even though the sample might be representative, you'll have some sampling errors, so a little bit of variability. You also, I think, have an issue as to whether you're really able to capture every single segment of a site's population accurately. And, you know, the more segmented a site's population is, the more difficult it can be to get a complete read. And that, frankly, that's one of the key reasons that we went to this 360 product. We said, look, let's combine the best of all possible worlds. Let's get the server side, which should be a census, but let's clean it for bot traffic and push traffic and the like, and let's integrate it with a panel, which really is a good measure of what people are doing. So it's not easy.
Yeah, it's, I completely agree. I think that that leads to another point that I've made quite often, which is if more people were actually in, you know, hired at companies or, you know, even at external firms, really crunching numbers to be able to look at all of these pieces and understand all of these segments, the way that, you know, the industry that I know best, which is television, has over, you know, over many years, and maybe the data is more straightforward for them, but, you know, for example, when I worked for Hearst Argyle, you know, they had an analytics guy that's crunching numbers, and of course part of that is to get higher ad spend, because if they crunch the numbers in a more favorable way than Nielsen does in a more, you know, very straightforwardly, then, you know, they get a higher return. So, you know, is there a piece, I sense that there's a piece missing, because I really feel like, you know, with a lot of the data points that are available, depending on the services that you use, and ComScore is certainly one of them, you know, that we would have a better picture. There wouldn't be such a huge looming question about ROI and social networking. Am I wrong here?
Well, I think there is an educational issue here, as well as, you know, maybe a total people resource. And, you know, it's sometimes easy to think that the computer will do it all for you, but, you know, I think you still need an analytical person who's interpreting what all these data are saying. And I'm not sure that anybody's figured out a substitute for that as yet. But I think there's another issue. I think on top of it, we are learning as an industry, as time goes by, and, you know, Lord knows this is a pretty young industry, we are learning the ins and outs of what it is that we're looking at and what we're measuring and what works and what doesn't work. And I'll give you a simple example. I'm fond of saying this, and this is the issue of the click. I mean, the click on a display ad has been used since the beginning of the Internet.
Yeah.
As a measure of ad effectiveness. And I think only now are we beginning to realize that it really isn't a predictor of ad effectiveness. And,
right.
You know, it took the fall off in the click rates down to levels of 0.1% to kind of lead us to that conclusion. And so maybe one of the lessons here is that just because something can be measured doesn't mean it matters. And you know, sometimes we kind of forget that, I think, in this day and age of computers, because we can measure so many things. So we need to know what it is that we're measuring. We need to know the implications of it and whether or not it's a relevant metric, and not just blindly go off and assume that just because the computer spat back a number, that number is a meaningful one. And I think that's a kind of a maturity that the Internet is coming to. I do sense that we are the rate of learning of what works and what doesn't work, what's right and what's wrong, has kind of increased recently, which I think is very healthy, and I think we're beginning to get our hands on a lot of the issues.
Yeah, so, you know, as an executive yourself, and you know, obviously having been an executive for quite some time, what I wonder is if more C-level executives looked closely at analytics or felt that there was a need to, that maybe there would be that this sort of void that I feel is there would start to get filled, or we would figure it out more collectively. Do you sense that, where there's this? You know, I've consulting, you get in and out of a lot of companies, heads, I guess, and I sense this overall, sometimes it's fear, sometimes it's just a time issue, but just sort of, you know, not from a top-down perspective saying analytics are important because they help us do X, Y, and Z, which drive our business goals.
Yes, I would agree that, you know, maybe the Internet and digital marketing has kind of brought front and center the issue that one needs to have some good quantitative analytical abilities to really be able to be effective in this industry. I would agree.
Amen.
At the same time, I guess every coin has two sides. At the same time, I think that one of the things that the digital industry could learn from traditional marketers is some of the things that they've experienced and gone through over the years. And I'll give you an example. You know, advertising has been around for a long time. Television advertising has been around for a long time. Some very, very sophisticated work has been done in that field. And there is a lot to be learned from that research and that experience that I think could be applied to digital marketing. I mean, one simple example is the value of reach and frequency metrics and the fact that, you know, an ad doesn't just work just with one exposure, which, you know, the click kind of assumed. And, you know, maybe, you know, the other side of the coin is maybe the digital marketing world needs to learn a lot more about what's been done already by some of the best-known minds in the industry. I mean, you know, people like David Ogilvy and Leo Burnett, I mean, these men weren't idiots. I mean, you know, they didn't rise to prominence just on the basis of, you know, their creative skills. And they learned a lot about how advertising works that I think we could apply very well in the digital world. So I'd like to see, frankly, more of a, you know, more of a kind of a meeting of the minds and leveraging everything that's best to move.
Yeah, the best of breed blending. That's always a good way to look at things. One question that I would have kind of out, you know, as sort of an example from my real life is the question that relates to what you talked about earlier, which was e-commerce. And we know e-commerce is I would guess we can say full bloom pretty much. I don't think I know anybody left yet that's still saying I won't give my credit card to a computer.
I think there are a few.
Yeah.
You might not know them, but they're hiding out there somewhere, I think.
They're hiding, exactly, or they're not telling me the truth. But you know, one of the questions that I've gotten, and you know, and I'll pose it to you is, can we assess? Can we somehow get the metric of, you know, if you're for example an online video media company and you want to sell because you have rights to a game? We know you're a sports fan, so that's rights based. So usually you have to. There may be a pay model involved, or you have to get a certain amount of sponsorship or advertising to make it cost effective. So can we get down to the point of understanding for a particular market, so say North America, what percentage of someone's household income is expendable so that we know how much we can, you know, how much we can try to pitch for? You know, I mean, basically get to a pricing model that would work.
You know, you certainly should be able to get a feel for, you know, what the state of the consumer economy is today. I mean, one of the things that is happening that I think would affect any pricing decision that any e-commerce retail would make is, you know, what is the amount of disposable income that the consumer has today?
If any.
After paying for necessities, right. I mean, it's, you know, for example, you know, we track e-commerce, and we started to see the growth rate of e-commerce, which had been running in the, you know, low to mid-20s for a number of years, start to slow or deaccelerate right around the end of 07, and then just continued deaccelerating as we went through 08, and then actually dropped negative in the fourth quarter. For the first time ever, fourth quarter of last year, as you know, all of these economic challenges came home to roost. And it was pretty clear that the first thing that happened that hurt e-commerce is the rising gas prices and then the attendant increases in the cost of food, because that really sucked disposable income out of consumers' wallets. And e-commerce, after all, is disposable income after the necessities of life, you know, food and gas and rent and the likes. And so, you know, I think e-commerce actually started to suffer in terms of a slowdown even before retail. So, you know, with that knowledge of those kind of macro events that are occurring, I think it's very valuable input into how much pricing power a retailer has. And, you know, today I think that the pricing power has moved from the retailer, frankly, to the consumer, you know, not just because of the economy, but because of the way that the Internet will inform a consumer of competitive prices and the deals and the best bargains in a way that we've never seen before. And so I think you've got to be really careful if you're a retailer, because, you know, if you don't have a unique selling proposition and delivering some kind of unique value, I don't think you can command the prices that you used to in the past. And so it's really important that I think any retailer really understand the segment that they're in, what consumer sentiment is in that particular product category, and, you know, what is consumer's willingness to pay for a given product. Without that kind of information, I think...
Yeah, sentiment is so key.
Yep.
So let's say we have a caller on the line that's been waiting for some time. So let's see if we can. Hello, welcome to the program. Hello? Let's see. Hi, are you with us?
Well, we'll take buys and we want to buy.
Hello, is someone waiting to talk to Gian? Sounds like he's on another line. Let's try another caller here. Hi, welcome to the program. Okay, well, we're not having luck with callers today.
We've been talking too long.
Yeah, exactly. So let's see. Obviously, you have a very impressive background of business achievements and awards. One of the things that really stood out for me when I was going through your bio is that how you've been able to really grow companies, as I mentioned before, that were eventually acquired. So as we, you know, as I'm basically asking you, what do you see in, you know, as sort of the growth for a company like Comscore, and, you know, and any specifics you can give us on that? And, you know, do you look for, you know, in sort of the larger business question, which is that kind of your specialty? Do you look for, you know, an acquisition strategy, or do you think there's an acquisition strategy when you join a company, or, you know, is that kind of your something that you sort of specialize in? Because it seems like you've really been able to grow companies to a point where they're so attractive that they're eventually acquired. So, you know, just kind of getting into your head, both from a business perspective and in terms of where Comscore is going as well.
Well, I the companies that I've been associated with have either been companies that I was involved in starting, or I joined very early on in their life, whether that's, you know, as a member of management or as a board member. So I was on a number of the boards of U.S. Robotics, subsequent prior to its acquisition by 3Com. I was on the board of Platinum Technologies before that was acquired by Computer Associates. I was on the board of Yes Mail. That was acquired by CMGI a while back. But those were all, as you know, my role there was a board member. At IRI, you know, where I served as CEO for 16 years or so, we took that company public in '83 and you know, then I ran a public company for 15 years or so. And then, you know, and then I left. So the company was later acquired by Symphony Technologies out of California, but I had left to start Comscore by then. So I you know, I don't have a, I can't say that I have a strategy of setting a company up to be acquired at all. I mean, my focus is more on growing the company, and then, you know, whatever will happen happens that's best for the shareholders. You know, that could be the company going public, or it could be the company getting acquired, or the company continuing as an independent entity. But I think what I enjoy doing is being involved in the growth of companies from a very early stage, and or founding them. And, you know, with Comscore, I was fortunate enough to, you know, to be one of the two founders, and then to be involved in, you know, in helping build the company to, you know, to where it is now. But I think I get my satisfaction from the growth and the challenge of maybe doing things that have never been done before, and maybe the challenge of achieving things that some folks might say are not possible. I think great satisfaction when that happens.
So you have an interesting educational background as well, with a bachelor's of science in physics, I believe, and a master's in marketing.
Right.
And I believe that was from the University of Manchester?
Yeah, in the UK. I was University of Manchester undergrad, and then I went to the University of Lancaster, also in the UK, for my master's. Right.
My husband will be glad. He's English, so
right?
He went to Exeter. So.
Yeah,
exactly. So in any event, I want to know a little bit more about you, the businessman, because obviously you're somebody that people can look up to, and you're incredibly easy to talk to. Kind of what was your journey? So you know, you had these two sort of parallel paths, obviously, being obviously very good with you know, physics and, you know, maybe more of the scientific side, but then you ended up, you know, doing, you know, pursuing higher education in marketing. Can you tell us about that, and then what your first role was?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. So what I realized early on, maybe in the first 3 weeks at undergrad, I was majoring in physics, is that while I might have been very, very good at the high school level, when it came to the big leagues of university, I might have been an okay physicist, but I was never going to be a great physicist. And so I figured that, if one kind of looks at, and I think this is important to kind of, do an honest assessment of one's strengths and weaknesses and try to figure out where, you really are able to have a competitive advantage, if you will. And I thought that the reason I went into marketing was I believe that while my analytical skills, as I said, they're pretty strong, but, I'm not going to be the best physicist out there, but I could combine communication skills and an understanding maybe of the consumer world with my analytical skills, and that maybe made me somewhat different from a lot of people. And so that mm-hmm. That's why I chose to go into marketing and then kind of parlayed that into a career in market research and market information, and came to the States because the first job that I was offered had me go to Pittsburgh to work for a small U.S. company.
That explains why you're a Steelers fan.
That is where I became a Steelers fan, as I was saying earlier. And so I lived in Pittsburgh for about 5 or 6 years and learned the basics of market research and information. But, that was in the kind of the low-tech early 70s, if you will. And it was really the late 70s and 1980 when John Malik, the founder of IRI, got that company going and called me and asked me if I'd like to go over and join him. And what was appealing to me there, and I think in a sense the ComScore kind of fills the bill as well, is that we were going through a technological dislocation. Scanners were being installed in the supermarkets, which eliminated the need to manually count boxes, which is what had been done prior to scanners. And so suddenly you had a new database available that could be used to generate a whole new portfolio of information services that weren't available before. And we leveraged that at IRI and built the company from a startup into a $500 million revenue company, took it public, as I said. And in many ways, ComScore was an idea that allowed Majid and I to do the same thing, leveraging the Internet. And so the Internet is the dislocation. And the key for us was, okay, so now how do we leverage the dislocation to create a new set of capabilities? And that's, I think both of us enjoy very much, doing that. So, we tend to come up with I think, pretty innovative ideas of how to apply information technology and new data. That's really what I've done in my career.
So I think that's fascinating. And, one question that, comes to mind before I ask you a little bit more about your co-founder and CEO over at ComScore, Majid Abraham, I'm really wondering, there's all these crazy valuations going on, and I think sometimes, I think there's some interesting things happening in the, certainly we know there are interesting things happening in venture-backed and, companies as well as, when angels decide to come in and invest. What do you make of how companies are valuing themselves? I mean, for example, there's, a story out today, and there's a story out pretty much every day about how Twitter's shopping around for funds at a $1 billion valuation, and yet more companies are making money off Twitter than Twitter is making money itself. So, in this sort of strange economic time, what do you make of valuations today?
Yeah. Well, I think we need to realize that the valuations today are far lower than they have been. And
yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah, the meltdown in the stock market in the fourth quarter didn't just affect public companies, but it lowered valuations across the board. So, if you're a private company, you're not going to get valued, the way that you used to. So that's a fact. Now, that said, you've got private companies like a Twitter, a Facebook that are reputed to be, getting these really high valuations, but I think you have to look at the scale of what these companies have been able to build. I mean, it's just staggering. I mean, here's a stat on Facebook. If Facebook was a nation, it would be the fourth largest country in the world.
Yep.
I mean, that, you know.
But
bad.
MySpace was able to say that at Web 2.0 Expo 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the numbers, you know, are just really staggering. Now, you know, and I saw that that it was announced that they had become cash flow positive in the second
mm-hmm.
quarter. So, I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment. So they deserve a really high valuation, in my opinion. Now, Twitter is a much younger company, but the numbers there are also, you know, staggering. I think that we're reporting them as having globally over 40 million unique visitors a month. And
mm-hmm.
that doesn't even include the folks who are now off running, you know, APIs like TweetDeck. So again, I mean, maybe the financial model with Twitter isn't clear as yet, but you have to look at the audience they've been able to amass and the way that they've been able to get into the fabric of society. I mean,
all over the world.
Yeah,
yeah.
And every night they seem to be on TV doing, you know, with some stat or other from Twitter. So, you know, that deserves, you know, to my opinion, that deserves one heck of a valuation for what they've been able to achieve today, even, you know, without the, you know, maybe the, you know, the profitability and all of that yet being proven, because they've really crossed one heck of an initial threshold. So I these valuations don't surprise me, and I don't think that they're unwarranted either.
Okay. So I'm a little surprised by your answer, but I'll take it. I want to turn my attention to Comscore's CEO and co-founder, Majid Abraham, as you said. He's kicking off the OMMA Global Super Conference with what is being called a very interesting presentation, I think you told me, on social networks Monday morning. Can you let us in on what news we might be hearing afterwards?
I can let you in on some of it, I think. You know, so I've been actually putting
Don't
together...
Don't spoil it.
I've been putting together some of the material with Majid. He's been really jammed with, you know, with traveling this week, so I volunteered to help him a little bit. And he's going to be showing some really interesting stats on social networks on a global scale and then in the U.S., and some really interesting numbers on what's happening with advertising on social networks, which I think is... you know, is an issue that I think a lot of advertisers are wrestling with. You know, how do we use the social networks most effectively? And we got some stats that we've pulled from the Comscore database that I think are very revealing about what's happening today, the stage of development of the ad industry. You know, what's going on with pricing with regards to advertising on social networks, and
mm-hmm.
then a case study that's pretty powerful about how effective a medium it can be. So that's what he's going to be talking about, and we'll add his own unique spin, I'm sure.
Yeah, it looks like on the conference homepage they're pretty excited he's going to be there. So that's you know, one piece of it. The other piece is that you're speaking on panels at OMMA as well as IAB's Mix next week in New York. What can attendees expect to hear from you? Give us a preview.
Well, I think on the one at OMA, that's an interesting one. And you know, I'm not going to be by any stretch the main contributor to that, but my I'll be moderating that one, but the four panelists there are all going to be talking about attribution models, which we touched on earlier. I think this is really, really an important issue, and basically it gets at, you know, what are the various forces, internet marketing forces, that impact on a consumer before they make that purchase, and what should we be taking into account beyond that final click, let's say on a search ad at the bottom of the search funnel? How do we incorporate all of the other maybe brand building advertising that the consumer has been exposed to? I think this is an important issue because I do think that it's easy with digital marketing, and sometimes we have a short-sighted focus. It's easy to underestimate the importance of brand building advertising and kind of look for the immediate gratification. And we got to be careful, because if we don't value the establishment of a brand and everything that it means in the mind of a consumer, I think we're going to be in a very, very different marketing world, where it's going to be, you know, maybe price becomes much, much more important than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's good for brand marketers, for any brand marketer. So mm-hmm. these attribution model discussions, I'm looking forward to hearing them. I know one of the panelists, Josh Drella from
mm-hmm.
Four in Chicago, and he's a bright guy, and he's got some really interesting work that he'll be talking about that they've been doing.
I think that lends credence, you know, just as an aside to our discussion a minute ago about Twitter as, you know, sort of a brand.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous brand inside, you know, that they've built there in such a short period of time. So, you know, again, you know, my hat's off to what they've done. And, you know, I know that, you know, one of Comscore's original investors, Fred Wilson,
mm-hmm.
at Union Square Ventures. Now, he was at Flatiron back in 99 when we started Comscore, and he was our first investor. I believe that Fred is an investor in Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's somebody who understands the Internet today and can spot the right opportunities and the right investments, it's Fred Wilson. So if he's into Twitter, I figure that's one one heck of a compliment. The other panel, before I forget, the other panel that I'm on is also an interesting one, because there will be, and this is a mix, they will be talking about the importance of e-commerce as a platform for advertising. And so we have representatives from Expedia and Amazon talking about how they are using the platform, or, you know, the audience base that they have on their own properties to run advertisements. And I've got a couple of examples that I'll be showing that are really interesting of how well that can work. And when you look at some of these e-commerce sites today, you know, we've got to realize that the traffic into these sites is enormous. And you're talking about 40, 50, 60, 70 million unique visitors a month. And
mm-hmm.
so I think, you know, somebody said, well, you know, if we got that many people coming into our properties, yes, we're trying to sell them products, but maybe there's an opportunity at the same time to build an advertising business, you know, to our benefit and that of our partners. So we'll be getting into that. I think it's kind of an interesting issue.
So I think that's fascinating. Do you have an example you can share now of how that's being done?
The one example that I'll be actually showing from using some Comscore data is a branded airline running an ad on Expedia.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you might think of Expedia as maybe competing with the branded airlines in many ways. But when you think about the folks that come to Expedia, they are going to be interested in anything and everything likely that's involved with travel. And so
mm-hmm.
it's a great platform. I think the Expedia example is a great one. It's a great platform for putting attractive offers and information and branding products to that audience. So I'm going to show how well that worked in a particular case study for Expedia and this branded airline, and build business for both companies.
That's amazing.
Kind of a win-win.
I think that's going to be really interesting. So I'm looking forward to seeing the news from that panel in particular. So before, you know, I want to get back to Comscore, because, of course, Comscore is a name that I have heard for so many years, it feels like, you know, having done this for some time. I talked to Veronica Belmont yesterday, and I thought, God, I feel so old compared to some of the newer personalities out there. But, you know, I feel like, you know, it still comes down to, and you're still relying on the metrics. I mean, I remember when I started my first TV news job, it was, okay, why do we wear our hair in ponytails instead of in buns like they do at the TV station or across town? And the reason was that they told me our target, you know, think of your target audience as a cross between these two iconic characters. And think of Murder, She Wrote being still on air, but Roseanne Barr, so from Roseanne, and Angela Lansbury from Murder, She Wrote. So those are that's your audience. And so they're not going to relate to you being uptight. You need to be this particular way. So, you know, I remember Comscore being around and kind of looking for those kind of relatable data points. And people, I think, love data. I mean, they certainly,
yeah.
I mean, Sherpa's chart of the week is always, you know, always something that I look for. What are kind of, you know, I think it's a good to take a look back in time at what are kind of the milestones that you consider the successes that put ComScore on the map in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think the first was our ability to measure e-commerce, and I think we were the first company to report the total amount of spending online on e-commerce. And, you know, to this day, I think our numbers are quoted by just about every media entity you could think of, and especially, you know, around the Christmas holidays, you know, the holiday shopping season.
Sure.
It's just craziness with the number of requests that we get from the media for our stats. You know, that's when we do a lot of radio and television appearances. And so I think that was the first, I think, being able to figure out the technology of how to do it and the sampling and the statistics and capturing the data and everything else that we had to build from scratch. I think when we finally were able to do that and then open our doors for business, that was a milestone. We had many other milestones. I mean, we went through, you know, the implosion of the internet and, you know, 9/11, which, you know, those two events together, you know, were really traumatic for everybody, obviously. You know, and so it was for an emerging business because, you know, demand, you know, just took a hit. And, you know, our cost structure was still there. And in these data businesses like ComScore, you make the commitment to building the database, whether you have no clients or 100. And
right.
You really don't have a lot of latitude for cutting costs, you know, when you're building the thing from, you know, from scratch. So, you know, we had to kind of suffer through additional financing rounds and the dilution that came with it. And, you know, that's never pleasant. So we had a few of those. But being able to then, you know, come back from that, you know, kind of nuclear nightmare, you know, was also, I think, important. It told us that we could do it, and I think was reassuring for, you know, for Machine and myself and, you know, for our employees and shareholders. And then I think we acquired MediaMetrics. That was a tremendous brand name. You know, we talked a lot about brands today, and that
mm-hmm.
was important. We thought we had a lot of great technology, but we weren't really anywhere near as well known ComScore as the MediaMetrics name. And so when we were able to acquire that U.S. business, that was a big step forward. Then getting to profitability, that was very, very significant, as you can imagine. You know, we'd gone through 5 financing rounds by then. So
how long did it take? What year did you become profitable?
I think it was probably around 2006. Somewhere around 2006, I believe. And, the nature, again, you know, of our business is it's a relatively fixed cost business, which is not good when you're operating below break even. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you get above break even, your marginal contribution to profits as you add incremental revenue can be very, very attractive, and it makes for, you know, makes for a very appealing business. So getting over that break even threshold was really, really important. You know, and there was just a lot of other things that happened, a lot of breakthroughs along the way, and then really culminated when we took the company public 2 years ago. That was, you know, that's something one never forgets.
And although, you know, now, you know, I think, you know, you provide a lot of data for free,
yep.
on
yep.
your site, and I think it kind of goes overlooked sometimes. I feel like a lot of social media strategists, certainly, but, you know, folks that are on the web are using data from compete.com or even Alexa still. I think the Alexa cleverly added the Amazon Amazon logo in the bottom right corner, you know, to perhaps enhance its own stature within the analytics community. But do you feel like in some ways, because I've sensed this with some companies that I've talked to, when I pull data from your site, people seem to kind of be re-remembering ComScore. It's like ComScore kind of, you know, got quiet for a while, and it's had I feel like you're in a time of reemergence. Am I wrong?
That's interesting. I'd be surprised if that was the case. We work really hard at putting information out there, you know, and for two reasons. One is, we want to provide information gratis that will help the industry. And you know, we put out an awful lot of data. I mean, for example, this year we will put out well over 200 press releases. That's about four a week. And you know, we get a lot of compliments from people who say they look forward to these releases. People in the industry, people outside of the industry, you know, saying, you know, it just really helps me keep up to speed on what's going on.
You know what? I should back up and say, when I present data points from ComScore, they seem folks are feeling much more comfortable and feel the data is much more quality, but that they hadn't heard of, you know, they haven't had, I guess, been presented with ComScore stats or data points in a while.
Interesting. Well, I'm pleased to hear the credibility issue, because I do think that...
Yeah, you're incredibly credible, I think.
Yeah, the ComScore is viewed that way. You know, we track our press and media coverage, and we get somewhere around 70% of all of the press hits that occur out there on a global basis in our space. So we're really happy with that. Now, you know, there's, in addition to providing all this information gratis, which is, you know, altruistic of us, if you will, you know, we also realize that, you know, there's a positive impact, you know, on our credibility. We're helping build the ComScore brand, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I did another computation to look at what would it cost if one had to go out and buy, as advertising, all of the coverage that we get, you know, through the mention of our data. And you would be spending well north of $50 million a year if you had to commercially go out and buy that kind of coverage.
Mm.
So, you know, it does a lot for us, but I do hope that that it's recognized as also contributing a lot of value to the industry. I think it does.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it definitely is. I think, how have your models changed over time? You know, your business modeling.
The fundamental business model has not changed in the sense that we are providing information. We try to do that under, you know, long-term contracts. What has changed, though, is the breadth of what we provide has really exploded. And I don't think that we, either Majid or I, realized in the early days just how many different things we would be able to measure through the technology that we had developed, or how big a market there was, how much demand there was likely to be for all of these different pieces. Where it maybe started to hit home for us was when broadband really became, kind of past critical mass, because broadband just fundamentally changed everything. It changed the way that consumers used the internet, and it changed the things that companies were able to offer them. An analogy, by the way, that's rather interesting, I find, is one could say that the smartphone will do to mobile what broadband did to the PC-based web.
Mm-hmm.
And just totally changed the name of the game. So you go back to your question. I don't think that the fundamental business model has changed, but you know, we have just gone through a lot of changes in what we collect and what we do with it and the products that we offer. And I hope we never lose that innovation and that kind of a culture, because I think that's what kind of, in a sense, has made us, you know, what we are. We are able to stay leading edge, and I think that our clients use ComScore, they subscribe to us, yes, for the value of the data that we provide, but I think a lot of them also look at us and say, you know, if I'm going with ComScore, I can rest assured that they will always be at the leading edge of what's being measured and what needs to be measured. And there's a comfort in that in a fast-changing industry like the Internet.
Interesting. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about as we go into our last few minutes here is the effect, I guess I would say, of Google Analytics across the board in the industry. You know, obviously they, I guess, you know, I have a bias in the sense that I think it's very important. You know, you can certainly use Google Analytics, and it has limitations. It tells you that in its FAQ. But I think there can be kind of an over-reliance, I want to say, or almost kind of a, you know, an analytic laziness to sort of rely on Google Analytics, and a lot of times it's not installed properly, or people rely on it to provide conversion to e-commerce, as you say. And companies like yours, I think, are much more sophisticated and can provide much more insightful data, yet, you know, folks just install Google Analytics and assume that their developers know how to do that correctly and don't really look at analyzing the data. They just kind of look at it, you know, they have the dashboard emailed to them and look at that. What's your take on Google Analytics in sort of a broad way and its place in the analytics market?
Well, I think they deserve a lot of credit for providing a product that's free, and I think has allowed a lot of websites who might not be able to afford, you know, the more expensive web analytics products, or you know, would have gone without insights into what's going on their website. So I think that's great. That's great for the industry. You know, I do think that just as we were discussing earlier, that one has to be cognizant of what the limitations are when you're running off of your own website, and you've got to deal with issues of cookie deletion, right? You know, you might be thinking that you're looking at 5 million unique visitors and you're really counting 5 million unique cookies. And, you know, when you bring it back to people, maybe you're only looking at 2 million people. So you've got to be aware of that. You've got to be aware that, you know, you could be understating your conversion rates if you're overcounting the number of visitors because of cookie deletion, and then you're counting the number of people that buy. Well, you got the number, you know, the number of buyers correct, but you know, your denominator could be too high. So you've got to understand these issues, and you know, I think that again, there's an educational component that I think any website should, or any website operator should be cognizant of and should pay attention to, that you just got to know the limitations of what it is that you're looking at. Otherwise, I think you can be kind of led astray a little.
I think that is a fantastic way of kind of putting in a perspective for folks, is to say you could be looking at 5 million unique cookies versus people.
Right.
It, you know, I smile, you know, as I'm saying that, because, you know, so often people assume that the cookie is a unique person, or that there's no solution for figuring that out, out the difference between a person and a cookie. So I think that's so key, and I hope people that are listening are really taking that away, because I think that's it. If we start going down the path of really analyzing things like that, I think, you know, clarity in terms of advertising ROI, and, you know, kind of the meaning of e-commerce today can only improve.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that, and again, I think it's good that, you know, this kind of educational process is happening, and that as time goes by, that everybody's learning more about, you know, what's black and white and what's different shades of gray in this, you know, whole process. But this cookie issue is a good example, because I think that ComScore was probably one of the leaders in pointing out that cookie deletion was happening, because we measured it empirically in our panel, and we saw that on average, there's variations around that average, but on average, if you're counting 10 million unique cookies, you are probably looking at somewhere around, divided by a factor of 2 to 2.5 to get the true people number, and, you know, you get a very different number. So just, again, got to be aware of these issues. And what we try to do, I think, is do our part in helping educate the industry to what is, you know, the reality on some of these metrics.
Really, really insightful. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is obviously very, very much into mobile. And you guys, you know, are collecting data globally, where mobile is maybe more standardized, so maybe – I'm not sure, maybe easier to measure. How much are you measuring the mobile market, either from an e-commerce or advertising or both perspective? And, you know, and are any companies coming to you with you know, and actively talking to you about that client, on the client side?
Well, you know, mobile actually presents some unique challenges. And, you know, some of the challenges are, I think, bigger issues than we had to face with the measuring the, you know, the PC. We measure with a survey consumer behavior on mobile devices in the U.S. and in four countries in Europe. We also have an electronic measurement, passive measurement, with software loaded on devices, and so we have a sample of people there where we're able to, you know, see what they're doing in great detail on the web. We have a measure of mobile advertising also that's spider-based.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not measuring e-commerce directly, passively via an electronic means, maybe at some point down the road. We
kind of early, but yeah, I can see.
Yeah. In the UK, we did get a contract, which is rather interesting. We had proven that we could integrate carriers' own data with our panel data to produce anonymized measures that are basically, it's a census from the carrier side with demographic data and other data from our databases. And the GSMA in the UK just about a couple of weeks ago announced that they had given us the world's first contract for the measurement of behavior on mobile devices, you know, using those two, you know, different databases. And we think that that could be the way that that the mobile industry will be measured going forward. In a sense, it's similar to what we're doing with 360, and that's an evolution, and I think progress, where we're, again, trying to take the best of both data sets and leverage them into a hybrid offering. I think that's the future where we, ComScore, will certainly be headed as we go forward.
Yeah, sort of that dashboard mentality of sort of, you know, combining all the data points and displaying what, you know, in a snapshot, what do I need to be concerned with, you know, having pre-combined and, you know, done the math behind, you know, what the numbers mean, so that you present, you know, perhaps, you know, we'll be calling these things, you know, different terms of analytic measurement, you know. But I think that is just, you know, it reminds me a lot of the idea of the, you know, you talked about before of the server-side analytics being combined with
exactly. The
other data. So, you know, it seems like that's nice in the sense that, you know, you can continue to understand how ComScore is analyzing data. And hopefully people will be able to make better data-driven decisions over time.
I would hope that that would be the outcome from, you know, from all of the work that we're doing and others in the industry, because fundamentally what we're trying to get to is to produce marketers and publishers with better information so that they can make smarter decisions. I mean, that's, when you come right down to it, is what it's all about.
Well, Gian, I want to thank you so much for making the time to come and educate us, talk to us about some examples, tell us where you're going to be. I hope when you're in the Bay Area, you'll give me a ping so I can let people know on my blog, remind them that you've been on the show and provided us with a lot of food for thought.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. It was great to spend a little time with you.
And enjoy the game. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Gian Fulgoni, chairman of ComScore. So we want to thank him for tuning in or being our guest here on the A-List, and I want to thank you for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. We'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio. And be sure to tune in next week when my featured guest is Andy Beal, founder of Tracker.com and co-author of Radically Transparent. That's 1 week from today at 12 Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free informational webcasts at jenniferlindsay.com. Have a great weekend.